Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning, everybody. This is Danny Nesvedarani, your host for the hour for this hour of Speak Up this Tuesday morning, as is the case every Tuesday morning for the foreseeable future. And today we've got a good mix of news pieces, not just ones that I've produced, not just ones that have been produced in-house here at CJSF, but some throughout the province of BC, as well as just throughout Canada, from the Local Journalism Initiative, which helps fund what we do here at CJSF, but also helps fund what a lot of people do at a lot of different community radio stations all across Canada. So before I get into any of the news that I have for this week, I'm going to start off with a bit of local music. This comes from a band by the name of Sour Dope. We actually had them here at CJSF not too long ago. I'm hinting at a little bit of something, but we here at CJSF have a series on our YouTube channel called Studio 6 Sessions or Studio 6 Live. And we will bring in local artists and kind of have them do a Tiny Desk style concert within our radio station. We are in the middle of actually uploading quite a few of those on our YouTube, so please stay tuned for that. We recently uploaded the Respectful Child Studio 6 session, and that one is really awesome, so you want to check that out. Go on our YouTube. Yeah. Anyways, this next track and first track is again by Sour Dope, and it is titled Water Temple, and it's the live version, so stay tuned for that.
We'll be right back.
All right, we are back with Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. That track was Water Temple by Sour Dope. Coming up next, though, we have the very first news piece of the hour. This is coming from the BC Federation of Students, an organization that I interviewed pretty recently because of a campaign that they recently started by the name of Cuts Suck, which goes towards restoring funding towards post-secondary institutions. Won't dwell too much because I explained it in the news piece. So without further ado, here it is. This is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. The British Columbia Federation of Students is sounding the alarm on increasing program cuts, reduced services, and longer waitlists going into the new school year. The BC Federation of Students, or BCFS, is a coalition of 14 post-secondary student unions throughout the province that advocate for more accessible and affordable post-secondary education. With the new school year now underway, the organization has started a campaign called Cuts Suck, which calls on the provincial government of BC to restore the public funding of post-secondary institutions to at least 75% of operating budgets, which would return this percentage to what it was before the year 2000. To learn more about this campaign, as well as the specifics of the program cuts and reduced services that the BCFS is advocating against, we sat down for a talk with Debbie Herrera-Lira, the organization's lead chairperson. During our conversation, we discussed how students can get involved with the campaign, the detrimental effects of post-secondary budget cuts, and why provincial funding for post-secondary institutions has decreased throughout the years.
20 years ago, the provincial government used to provide funding to the post-secondary sector. They used to provide 70% of funding. Now, 20 years after, it's less than 30%. Years ago, they discovered that by inviting more international students into the country, they can actually rely on international student fees to pay for our education, while at the same time divesting in post-secondary education. So when the provincial government provided less money over the past past 20 years, they were charging international students double, sometimes even triple, to study in Canada, and relied on their tuition fees to pay for everyone's education, and for, you know, all institutions across British Columbia that did it. We have always told the provincial government that the funding model is unstable, that this is relying on international student fees was unstable. And we always knew, we were always seeing that the provincial government was divesting in our education. So we always knew that this was an issue and this was happening. We've been calling on the provincial government to do something for years. But now in 2025, when the IRCC introduced new restrictions for international students and international student visas were being restricted, and there's less international students now, then their funding is, of course, like, is no longer being used for institutions, or not as much as it used to, which means that we're really seeing the effects of lack of funding from the provincial government, because that is still there and that is still the root cause. So that is the reason why everywhere and different institutions and colleges and universities are experiencing similar things, and which is why it's harder for students to continue their education.
Debbie Herrera-Lira then went on to describe some of the issues that students are facing in post-secondary institutions as a result of this lack of funding.
But what we're seeing across the province is that because of a lack of provincial funding from the provincial government to the post-secondary sector, institutions across British Columbia are having to make program cuts, course cuts, even lay off faculty, and that is deeply impacting students' education and campus life. We are hearing from students that, from some students that have had to transfer to different institutions because their program was cut. I know a student that I just recently met had to transfer three different times to three different institutions. courses are being cut, which means that they are delaying their graduation by semesters and sometimes even years. And because of budget cuts on campus or layoff of staff and faculty, services, important services like the library or even counseling services on campus are less accessible than they used to be. So that's, again, impacting students on campus.
Lastly, we asked Debbie Herrera-Lira how students can get involved with this campaign, as well as just advocating in general for increased budgeting for their post-secondary institutions. This is what they had to say.
We have a couple of actions that students can take across the province to help us in advocating for more funding. We have 14 member locals, and at those 14 institutions, we are currently gathering postcards from students, taking their photo, and we're going to actually mail them out next week. We're trying to get as many as possible, hoping to mail hundreds, if not hopefully thousands, that the Minister of Education will have to open each one, record each one, and stare in the faces of students that are currently experiencing those cuts. So to any students out there, if they see that on campus and they see the student union talking about that, we'd love to get your postcard and make sure to send it so that, you know, we're stronger together, where we have the more numbers possible, the more chances we have of being heard. But also, if anyone goes to our website, cutsuck.ca, we have an email tool list with a pre-written email that students can just enter their information, or anyone can enter their information, and that email will be mailed to your MLA, the Premier, and the Minister of Education. That way, again, making sure that our voices are heard and getting as many numbers as possible of people to contribute to our campaign.
Once again, that was our conversation with Debbie Herrera-Lira, the chairperson for the BC Federation of Students, talking about their recent advocacy campaign, Cut Suck, which is calling on the provincial government of BC to restore the public funding of post-secondary institutions to at least 75% of operating budgets. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This segment would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca. Once again, you are listening to Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. That was a news piece that I did for frequencynews.ca about, not only the campaign that the BC Federation of Students is currently working on, but also just something that I had never heard about. And I think that is something that is really cool about this job, is being able to learn about things that I didn't have, I guess, certain perspectives on beforehand, knowing that the operating budgets that provincial governments provided for post-secondary institutions has gone down so drastically within, I would say, recent years, but since the year 2000, is quite shocking. And it'll be interesting to see whether this campaign bears fruit. And now we are on to the very next news piece. This one is not from myself or anyone else at CJSF, but it is coming out of CFMH in St. John, New Brunswick. The title of this piece is "Demonstrators Protest Against Council's Move Towards Red Zone Encampment Removals." And I think this is a piece that I would like to play, and I would say it's still relevant for us here in the Lower Mainland, because I think it deals with very similar issues of proposed relocation of encampments and things of that nature that are going on all the time within this area, that are also going on all over Canada, including St. John, New Brunswick.
A protest against proposed relocations of encampments from mapped red zone areas of the city took place on the steps of St. John City Hall on Monday evening, prior to the Common Council meeting. The newly allocated red zones, which cover a large proportion of the city, also include 200-metre buffers around schools, as well as other buffers around places such as playgrounds and sports fields and major roads. Relocations from the city's red zones were discussed at Monday evening's meeting as a part of a broader strategy to address issues surrounding the unhoused population of St John, including working on a number of transitional housing projects. Local 107.3 FM spoke with organiser of Monday's protest, Britt Rose, about what was taking place at the event and the reasons for opposition to the relocations.
We're holding a demonstration and a protest in response to the meeting discussing the red zones. We are here because we are against displacing the unhoused. We have 101 flameless tea lights here. Each tea light represents one life that we are remembering this evening, a life that was lost due to societal failure in the unhoused community or due to poverty in St. John. We also have some pencils that people will be placing on the steps. Each pencil will represent one person who is against displacing the unhoused and one vote that the city and the province will not get in the next election. A person who is unhoused is 5 times more likely to die than somebody who is housed. 20 of our unhoused neighbors will die within the next year without being displaced, and that number will increase drastically if they are forced into hiding away from the few resources that they already have.
Cara Coase, the city's senior manager of community support services, addressed the City Common Council about the city's approach to relocations.
For our encampment relocation response, we are taking a person-centered, compassionate, and rights-based approach, respecting that as an actual individual living in an encampment. Over the last couple of years, we've been working with our community agencies and our outreach team and province to be able to implement and work through how a relocation response could look. The outreach team would visit the encampment and speak with the individual, letting them know that we need to relocate, and has a discussion as to where an alternate location could be for that person. Step two, they revisit if the person hasn't voluntarily relocated or if they're still trying to figure out where to go. Outreach team touches base again, works with that individual, and provides any supports that are necessary. Step three is taken, sometimes the police of St. John, as well as other agencies supporting with the multidisciplinary team to help relocate those individuals. As we're working through this three-step approach, approximately 94% of the time, most individuals voluntarily relocate. It's not as often that we would need to engage a multidisciplinary team.
We are asking the city to, before they make any evictions or changes, to make sure that our unhoused friends have a place to go. They have another home to go to, and they have resources for them. Social work resources, mental health and addictions resources, those things all need to be set in place before we discuss moving anybody or upending anybody's life. I think that the community should have been consulted, that the unhoused community should have been consulted on these decisions, which they were not. I also believe that the rest of the city should have been consulted on this discussion before it would be put to a vote, because we have a lot of really compassionate people in St. John who want to take care of the most vulnerable members of our city, and we are willing to do that, and we are willing to rally to do that, but we do need the city behind us.
In discussing the proposals at the meeting, Councillor Greg Stewart acknowledged that although the plan may not be perfect, action needs to be taken, albeit in a compassionate way.
We're not going to have a perfect plan. It's a very contentious issue. We can't please everybody, but we have to do something. What is happening is not sustainable, and it's no longer acceptable. We have compassion, absolutely. We've worked on this plan, and this is the best plan we can put forward right now to get some action done. This is going to be changing, and there's going to be details added to this. But understand, please, that we care. But what's been happening is just not sustainable and not acceptable. So if not tonight, then when do we do this? We can't keep putting this off. So we're asking for the public to please work with us to help be understanding. This is going to take some time. But we do believe that our plan is the best plan that we've seen, and the federal government and the provincial government believe that it is as well. That's why they're funneling money down to us. So please be patient and let our team continue to work on the best plan that's available and that's out there. So
the plan was passed by the council, with only Councillor Greg Norton opposing, having earlier introduced a notice of motion to remove all encampments from all city-owned land.
where I'm going to have a struggle supporting this is what we're dealing with is the possibility of much of our public being color-coded into a yellow zone. And from my vantage point, there is no yellow zone. We are a red zone. We have got to take a position, and my vote has to lead me that way, that we are at a point in time that we have to red zone. And that is not to say that we can't do that with peace, order, and good government and deliver it in a compassionate way that is compliant with the charter. But from my vantage point, we are no longer at a time where it's yellow or green. We are a red zone as a community.
I don't think displacing people in the first place is a positive thing, but then having people in positions of power coming in to remove you, that turns it into something completely different. So the city is also planning on having outreach teams assist with the removal, but that doesn't seem like a good solution either, because outreach teams are there to support these communities and provide immediate needs. And by removing and displacing people, outreach teams are doing the exact opposite of what they believe in, especially when, again, they don't have a place to go to. They're not being given another home to go to. So there's approximately 400 unhoused people in St. John right now. There's approximately 140 shelter beds, that's including the 10 youth beds, and less than 100 transitional houses. So that's still 200 people that have nowheres to go. Truly, the answer is having all of this planned out before even talking about displacing anybody or removing any encampments. We need to house people. Housing is a human right under international law. We need change. Absolutely, everybody can agree on that. But the order that the city is planning on doing things is counterproductive.
Councillor Norton's motion will be debated on September 22nd, at which time the plan will return to council for another vote on policy framework. The audio from the council meeting was taken from the City of St John YouTube channel. This is Iona Cove, Local 107.3 FM and the Local Journalism Initiative.
Thank you so much to Iona Cove for that piece coming all the way from St John, New Brunswick. Before we get on to the next talk segment of the hour, here's some more local music from the Brad Turner Trio, Plus One. And this track is titled Can't Know How.
Thank you.
Once again, that was Can't Know How by the Brad Turner Trio Plus One. You're listening to Speak Up only on CJSF 90.1 FM. This is your host, Danny Nesvedarani. And coming up next, we have a longer form piece coming from Montreal. The title of this piece is A Montreal Tenant Face a Major Rent Hike Until They Hit the Streets. And this comes from CKUT and their in-house LGI journalist, Jules Bugel. And it is about a